Holy cow, the arms race is strong, and LSU jumping to the head of the class. A new mind-blowing locker room, a state-of-the-art nutrition center. Now they just got to keep on winning. Speaking of winning, it was Shane Lowry at the Open Sunbelt Conference Media Days today. We'll hear from head coach Billy Napier and much, much more. Glad you're with us today, Monday, July 22nd, 2019.
Adrianza at third, two outs in a 6-6 game, and the pitch, a line drive, left center field, that's going to land, base hit, Adrianza scores, the Twins win, the Minnesota Twins win it!
Swung on as a high drive into left, going back on the ball, McNeil at the warning track, at the wall, adios, hello! It's all over. A walk-off home run for Mike Yastrzemski to the opposite field. And the long day is over. The Giants take the series from the Mets. 3 out of 4.
This one is hammered. A rocket high into the heavens and deep to left field and gone. Ronald Acuna punctuates this one with a two-run home run deep to left.
Some of the sounds of summertime baseball in the big leagues. And the Twins, yes, they win again. One of the surprise teams this year in baseball, the Minnesota with a 3-game lead in their division in the American League. The Yankees still with a 9-game lead over the Rays in the East. The Astros have upped their lead to 6.5 games in the West over the Athletics, and the Twins by 3 over the Indians. And that we say good afternoon and welcome. It's great to be with you on this Monday edition from the 237 Roof Studios, where my main man's in the master control suite. CD, the stick stirring the drink. Yours truly here, Studio 1A. Great to be with you. Hope you all had a fabulous, fabulous weekend and a busy week we have planned for you and your Sunbelt Conference Media Day is taking place as we speak in the New Orleans Superdome. Raymond Parsh was there to do his show this morning. Ben Love will be there after this show at 4 o'clock to do his show, Bumper to Bumper Sports. Raymond caught up with Billy Napier. We'll hear from the second-year head coach of the Raging Cajuns at about 2:30 this afternoon. So that's coming up. In hour number two, we'll have Hot Topics. Billy Embody will join us to talk about recruiting, not only on the football side of things, but the basketball side of things as well. Football gets their 21st commitment, a big, lanky, 6'7" tight end out of Colorado. I can see Miles Brennan just throwing it up in the red zone, into the end zone from the red zone. And this big 6'7" kid stretching up and getting, that'd be great. And Shane Lowry wins the Open Championship in his home country. It was very fitting. It was very emotional. He ran away with it with a 6-stroke lead. Alex Myers of Golf Digest will join us. He'll rank the 4 majors. He'll give us his top 5 players in the world. Very easy, who's number 1, and that's the new sheriff in the world of golf, who speaks his mind, and I, for one, love it, and that's Brooks Koepka. But we begin the show today with the arms race in college football, and LSU unveiled its new state-of-the-art football ops center, where they've turned lockers into sleep pods. It's absolutely incredible. To the tune of $28 million, the renovation of the football ops center. New locker room. A much-deserved and much-welcomed nutrition center that's open to all student athletes. not just football players, but all student athletes, 24/7, with a chef that came from the NFL who plots out the menu and helps organize, just like a restaurant, organize the meals and puts it out there, buffet style. So the arms race is on, and all this money raised privately did not come from any taxpayers' dollars. It was all raised by the Tiger Athletic Foundation. Former players contributed, like Tyrann Mathieu with the Player Lounge, contributed $1 million to this thing. Giving back, a remarkable story. Sarah Alfaro will join us in a few minutes. She is the interior designer for HNTB Architectural Firm. We're going to find out how this all started from day one to now, how this all came about. And look, this is all about the best utilization of time for these football players. Football is the money earner above and beyond anything else on that campus. And because they produce the most revenue, they have the right to do what they want. They contribute to the academic side of things every year. They do. They write a nice big check to the academic side. But they need to take care of themselves as well. And these players have the best of everything. So I don't need to hear about paying players anymore. I just don't. They get a free education. They get the best food you could ever imagine. First-class food. First-class environment. First-class tutorial service. They have everything at their beck and whim. I don't need to hear about paying players. I just don't. They don't mingle with the normal student body and eat the food that the normal student body eats at the cafeterias. They don't. They are the upper echelon. They're taken care of medically. They're taken care of mentally. They're taken care of physically. They're taken care of. It is, if you haven't seen it, just Google LSU Football Ops Building. And it is significant. Yes, it's all part of the entire puzzle. First, you got to have a winning program. You got to put players in the NFL, and you better have really, really, really good facilities, and you better be on TV. You put it all together. That's the pizza pie known as recruiting. And LSU's at the top of the list in all of them. That was a building that Nick Saban created through his pushing, needling. So we thank him for that. It was time for a renovation from 2005, and the renovation has occurred, and it is absolutely sensational. Sensational. I don't need to hear about paying players anymore. I just don't. Maybe because I'm a player and I didn't get paid a dime, but I appreciated my free education. I appreciated those three square meals every day. Didn't have to open up my wallet at all. And we worked in the summertime, and we made some money that way, and that would last us. That's how we did it. It's a full-time gig with these players, but they are treated like royalty. These sleep pods are, it's like when I was doing the Hornets games. You're sitting in a chair, nice, comfortable chair. You push a button, and bingo, that thing stretches out, leans back, and you can sleep on those things. They are spectacular. So we'll find out how it all started. LSU at the top of the class. Sarah Alfaro gets us started today. The interior designer for the architectural firm that joined up with LSU and created this state-of-the-art facility. That's next. The Jordy Helfrich Show. 103.7 The Game, 103.7thegame.com.
Social. Follow us on Twitter at 1037 The Game or like 1037 The Game on Facebook. Taking the hottest topics out there and dousing them in gasoline. It's the Jordy Hultberg Show on 1037 The Game.
And we're back. You know, locker rooms are a very, very important part of any team, no matter what sport, no matter what era, no matter what level. LSU football has just turned its locker room into a first-class area of pods with sleep space. I've never seen anything quite like it. They unveiled it yesterday. They'll have a ribbon-cutting ceremony coming up later this week. But I had to go to the source of the Versailles of college football operations buildings. And Sarah Alfaro is an interior designer with HNTB Architectural Firm, who combined with LSU to come up with this state-of-the-art, one-of-a-kind type of an environment. And, Sarah, I greatly appreciate the time. How are you?
I'm doing well, Jordy. How are you?
I'm doing terrific. Take me back to day one, when LSU and HNTB, your staff, got together and met. What was that first conversation like? What do you recall was LSU's thought process, and how did this all unfold?
So, from the very beginning, LSU had told us that they wanted to do something different with this locker room, that, you know, everyone out there right now is, you know, doing different versions of each other. And we wanted to make sure that they were different. And they had come up with the idea of trying to create a first-class airline locker pod. And they had tried to find resources to help them with that matter, and they were coming up short. And so that's when they came to us and said, hey, what can you do? This is our idea, kind of in a defeated mentality, like maybe this won't happen. And so as HNTB, we took that on as a challenge, saying, let's see if we can make this happen. And so we just started brainstorming ideas on, you know, how can we make this first-class feel? And the main concept being separating the upper storage from the lower storage compartments and creating a sight line across the entire locker room. That I just remember the conference call we had with the owners and showing them a sketch of our idea, and their excitement that came across the phone, and just like feeling like this dream could actually become a reality, and just all that excitement and energy built into our team, our design team, and myself and Chase were cranking away on sketches and modeling and really diving into the little details on how to see if this was really feasible. How can we put it into the room, make efficient use of the space, and provide all the amenities that were desired to make this a personalized recovery zone for each player?
This is to best utilize the all-important time factor. It seems to me now the coaches have an environment where the players won't want to leave, and so therefore camaraderie is built. Film study is there. Why go anywhere else? That's kind of the idea I get.
Sure. So, you know, we provided this space where really players can utilize any of their downtime they have during the day, and, you know, take a quick power nap. The sleep studies that are coming out and realizing just how important sleep and recovery is can be for players. We wanted to make sure we capitalize on any moment that happens for each player. And so by providing these spaces, we can capitalize on those, you know, 20 minutes here or there, power naps that can get the players through, you know, practices and just recover from everything that they're going through.
Sarah Alfaro of HNTB Architectural Firm, she's the interior designer. What I notice is, you mentioned it's separating the lower from the upper. Gone are the locker rooms with the place where you can hang your clothes. Where do the guys hang their clothes, and where do they put their shoulder pads and stuff? How does that work?
Sure. So we took an approach that, you know, your shoulder pads and your helmets and your shoes and all of that gear that gets really sweaty and grimy during practice, right, we created a mud room. So it's a separate room adjacent to this locker room that they have a kind of a route that they take off the field, and they can place all their gear on these drying racks and can sanitize them, and the equipment managers can go through all of that in a separate space. And then The helmets themselves can go into the upper storage compartment, and there's LSU has sensors in their helmets, and so you can charge those in the upper storage compartment. So we're trying to take out some of that really grimy bacteria driven equipment and put it into a separate room.
Thank you.
And as well as trying to make it smell a little better in those rooms. And the lower storage compartment is also ventilated, knowing that, you know, they're going to have shoes that they're walking around in, all of their day-to-day gear they can throw into that lower storage drawer, and it also is ventilated. So, you know, just in general, we're trying to make this as clean and safe an environment for the players as well.
Amazing, Sarah. Absolutely amazing. How long from start till you got the concept and you had the renderings and you had the approval? How long did this all take before they actually started taking a hammer and a nail and doing some work?
That's a complicated answer to that. We started the process and the sketches early 2018. And then with the locker manufacturer, who is OFS, they have been involved from the very beginning in different mock-ups and prototypes and things like that. So hammers and nails got started really early on in this process for us.
Okay.
And then having the contractor come in, and Arkell was really involved in making sure that the construction tolerances of that locker room were less than a 16th of an inch, which is unheard of for,
wow,
you know, typical construction. So we had to make sure everything was to the T, perfect for these lockers to come in and be organized with all the mechanical and electrical systems and everything like that. So early 2018 up until, you know, the reveal yesterday, everything was a work in progress.
Has this been the most challenging undertaking you've ever been involved in?
Challenging as well as exciting. Like, this has become very much so a passion project for myself, as well as Chase, the other designer, and OFS and LSU and Arkell. Like, everybody involved has really taken this on, uh-huh, as a passion project. We know we're doing something special, and we wanted to make it the best we could. And so the amount of care and detail that went into everything is astounding, and I'm truly grateful to be part of this team.
That's awesome. So when you open these sleep pods up to its fullest extent, how long are they?
I believe the final dimension from where your head would lay to the end of the drawer is about 82 inches. We wanted to make sure even the, you know, the taller players can fit on there comfortably.
How appealing was it to you when you saw the video and they opened up the doors and the players ran in and the look on their faces and the joy, and like, what? I mean, that's got to be fulfilling.
It's extremely gratifying. You know, we've put so much effort and time and everything into this project to, you know, for a time there, it was like, okay, I think there's just a small group of us that thinks this is a neat idea. You know, are we crazy, or are we really onto something here? And to see everyone's reactions and to feel that emotion come through in the video of everything was just extremely gratifying and satisfying for the, you know, all of our hard work.
I wonder how long it's going to take before HNTB starts getting phone calls from across the college football landscape to try and do something along these lines. I mean, this is a one of a kind. And when it's called the Versailles of college football, I mean, other people are going to want this. So this could be incredible. I want to be your agent and get you a new contract.
You know, I think the calls have already started to come through, but we've really taken the approach of, you know, this is a unique design and product for LSU, and we don't think anybody can really replicate that, nor does anybody have the program that can stand up to and, you know, take this forward like LSU does. So, you know, when other clients come calling, we are up to the challenge on creating something special for them as well, knowing that we're not really just going to do the copy-paste mentality. So
right,
we're just striving to meet all the challenges.
Color scheme, was that your baby? I mean, there's a like a mahogany look. There's white. There's the, of course, the purple cushion with the gold LSU Tiger logo on it. How much a part of that was you?
So I was integrated into not only the colors, but just the overall size, dimension, every little detail of the locker, as well as the entire room it fits into. I was part of that, including, you know, working through mechanical and electrical stuff with the consultants. But, you know, really we wanted to create a design that was very LSU, but also we didn't need LSU's, you know, all of their logos all over the entire room. We tried to make sure we had a sophisticated, clean line approach mm-hmm. to the design mm-hmm. and the materials. And, you know, each material was selected for its high durability and its longevity for the youth. You know, all those guys in there aren't exactly gentle giants, so we wanted to make yes. sure that these pods would withstand the test of time, you know, for the good days and the bad days. So, you know, all the care and detail was put into those materials and, you know, the finished selections. You know, the wood tones are reminiscent of, you know, kind of the old mentality of, you know, that country club style locker room that you see right. in a lot of places, that traditional side of things. We know we needed to bring in a little bit of that warmth into the space, but, you know, their brand and colors just took it to the next level.
Do you know offhand how many pods there are in that locker room?
Yes, there is 120.
120. Wow. Wow. I tell you, it is, it's remarkable. It's beautiful. It's first class. Congratulations to you and all those that were involved in this process. Wow. You kind of planted the flag on the top of the mountain. I don't know where you go from here, but I'm sure you will, Sarah.
Yes, we're very excited for the things to come. And thank you very much, Jordy. We're very excited to, you know, see how this all plays out. And we're very excited for LSU football and go Tigers.
Well, I hope you come on down to a game or two because of this. And, Sarah, I know you got to catch a plane, but thank you so much for your time, and congratulations to all at HNTB Architectural Firm. What a job well done, and thank you.
Thank you, Jordy. Have a good day.
All right, you too. About $28 million worth, all privately raised through the Tiger Athletic Foundation, and this is for the Football Ops Center. This is where they are more so. Nothing's changed inside of Tiger Stadium. This is their football ops building. They've got the nutrition center now. It's just it's first class digs. No question about it. We'll take a quick timeout. When we come back, Sun Belt Conference Media Days. Our Raymond Parrish caught up with head coach Billy Napier of the Raging Cajuns. We'll have that for you next here on the Jordy Helfrich Show. 103.7 The Game. 1037thegame.com.
Who's got game and who's the next big thing at LSU? Jordy Hultberg will set you straight on Acadiana Sports Station, 1037 The Game.
All right, welcome back. We get away from the LSU scene because in New Orleans today, the Sun Belt Conference held its annual media days. Our Raymond Parrish did his RP3 and company earlier this morning. He caught up with the head coach of the Raging Cajuns, Billy Napier, a team that's picked to win the Western Division of the Sun Belt Conference as he begins year two of his domain as the head coach in Raging Cajun land. And so we thought we'd play it for you. Here is Raymond with Billy Napier.
Before we get things started, I know your birthday was yesterday. Did you enjoy yourself? Did you celebrate a little much or maybe a little too much? Or did you make sure to kind of be a little bit more responsible since you had all your responsibilities to my friend?
No, business as usual, man. You know, Allie and the kids and I, brunch, church, you know, hooked up with Bam and Deuce and the guys. We headed down to New Orleans. We had the Fido Dough last night with the Sun Belt Conference. It was great to catch up with some of our investors and administration and see some of the other coaches and other players. So we're excited about today, and we appreciate you guys covering our team.
Well, appreciate you making the time for us, Coach, and it's our pleasure. You know, take me back a year ago. You know, you're gearing up for this, first time being a head coach, taking over a program, trying to establish this identity. You have to come down here to New Orleans, go through everything that encompasses media day. What do you remember most from your first media day last year?
Well, I mean, heck, it's all new, you know, and you're chomping at the bit. I think really low expectations last year, you know. I think not people didn't expect much of us, you know. I think which was fine with me as a coach, you know. You want to have a little bit of a chip on your shoulder and your players to have the same, but I think this year we see it no differently. You know, we it's a new group of players. Certainly we've added people on our staff. You know, we start over. You know, we repeat that process and try to get better at it. And I think that's where we've probably made the most progress is just in general redoing everything, even media day to day. I think, you know, we'll do it better. So I think everybody in the organization on our team is working at a much more efficient pace. And I'm excited about this group of players. You got a core group coming back that experienced all those things that you're talking about last year, certainly didn't finish the way we wanted to. So we've had a little bit of an edge in this offseason, and I think that's healthy.
We're talking with Raging Cajun head football coach Billy Napier right here on Radio Row at Sunbelt Media Day. Coach, let's talk a little bit about the finish. I know it was disappointing, the loss to App State in the inaugural Sunbelt Conference Championship game. And then I think probably more disappointing for you was the bowl game against Tulane. What did you take out of that being a first-year head coach? Was it something about the preparation? Was it getting the guys have the right mindset? Did you do some self-evaluation? What was the process following that disappointing loss to Tulane in the bowl game?
Well, first of all, I think, you know, I was extremely proud of our team, the way we made improvement as a regular season, really going on a run there and winning some critical games and clinching the Western Division, having an opportunity to go to Boone, North Carolina, and play in the championship game, and really competing that game with the intangibles that you would want your team to play with. You know, did we do everything perfect? No, absolutely not. But I think our team was ready to play. We were tough, physical. We played with great effort. Didn't quite execute the way we want to. And that was a really, really competitive, good football team that App had last year. You know, they dominated their bowl game. So a lot of respect for their program and certainly Coach Satterfield moving on to Louisville. Yeah. Kudos to him. You know, he's a heck of a coach. So, you know, I think the bowl game is a different set of problems, you know, relative to a two-week turnaround to get ready for the bowl game, managing recruiting, managing final exams with our players. And then, you know, a little bit of a letdown because in our players' head, they were coming to the Superdome to play in this New Orleans Bowl. You know, they knew if they won the game, we're coming back to New Orleans and play. And, you know, not that Orlando was a bad bowl game or a disappointing for us, but I think in our players, maybe there was a little bit of a letdown there. But I think we did not quite work the way that I would want us to work in that two-week process, you know, getting ready for that game. We didn't quite have the same edge, and I was disappointed with some of the intangibles that we played with in that game. So I think anytime your team doesn't play as well as you think they could or should, you know, as a head coach, you look in the mirror, you reevaluate things, and I've worked really hard on that two-week turnaround because if we play well this year, we're going to have the same scenario of next year. So whether that's in New Orleans or Orlando or in Montgomery, whatever the case may be. So, you know, it's something that we worked hard in the offseason. We've studied numerous people that go through that two-week transition, and whether that's NFL in the bye week or for the playoffs or the Super Bowl two-week turnaround, and then obviously there's a number of college teams that have done that with the bowl game. So we've worked hard on that, and that's our job as coaches to have the team ready, and I think we've got a better plan this year coming if we get to that situation.
We're talking with Raging Cajun head football coach Billy Napier right here on Radio Row at Sunbelt Media Day. Coach, what's the biggest takeaway for you, biggest lesson learned for you from year one as a head coach here with the Raging Cajuns?
Well, it becomes more and more evident that you got to surround yourself with really good people, you know, and I think that's what gives me some confidence is because I really believe in the group of people that we have, our coaching staff, support staff. I think we've got a lot of young talent in our organization. We've got some wisdom with some veteran coaches, and I think we've got a sound way that we go about our business, you know, our year-round process to get our players ready and make an impact on them and as people. I think we did it better so far. Every little phase that we've gone through so far, we're more efficient, more effective. It gets overlooked a little bit sometimes, I think, that everybody talks about the players in year two, but really when you start thinking about it's everybody. It's the whole organization. It's the coaches. It's the support staff. Everybody knows what to expect. We've defined expectations. We made all the mistakes in year one, and we're better at our job. And I'm no different than any player on our team or member on our staff that's coming back for year two.
We're talking with Raging Cajun head football coach Billy Napier right here on Radio Row at Sunbelt Media Day. Coach, let's talk about the two young men that you decided you picked to bring with you. Why did you pick these two young men to help represent the Raging Cajuns at Sunbelt Media Day today?
Well, they epitomize what we want our football team to be about, you know, and certainly they're players that we want our team to emulate, you know, the young players on our team and the other veteran players. Bam and Deuce have been nothing but class since we got there. You know, both are kind of unsung heroes in a little bit, in my opinion. We could have brought several players. I mean, we've got a whole list of guys. But I think these guys are fifth-year seniors. You know, these are guys that are tremendous leaders on our team. They're vocal. They're great examples with their work ethic, their selflessness. They have discipline, and they're very committed to our overall big-picture plan. You know, they've made a huge impact on our team in this offseason. So each has its own little unique story. You know, Deuce is a legacy. He's a former walk-on that we put on scholarship. Played a pretty significant role in our team last year and is primed to be a tremendous leader for our team this year. You know, Bam's a guy who was injured, didn't go through training camp last year, didn't catch a ball in the first four games of the season, didn't hear one word out of the guy. He just kept working and made a tremendous impact on our team on special teams. He plays our H position, which is kind of does a lot of the dirty work. He plays well without the ball. And, again, as the ball started coming his way, he made tremendous plays throughout the year. So these guys are what we want out of our football players as players, but more importantly, the type of young men and the type of students that we want as well.
We're talking with Raging Cajun head football coach Billy Napier here on Radio Row at Sunbelt Media Day. Coach, I have to ask you about your three-headed monster in the backfield. Elijah Mitchell, former ERAF star, local product. Raymond Calais, another local product from Sicilian, of course, Trey Regis. You look through all the preseason publications, all three of those guys are getting recognition from one publication or another. They're so different, but yet together they form a tremendous backfield that averages more than 200 yards per game. How much of an asset is it having those three guys in that backfield once again coming into this coming season?
Well, I think that anytime you rush the ball effectively, it takes a team effort, you know, and I think that it's one of the things that we take pride in our program. We want to be a physical, tough team that plays with a relentless effort, and I think rushing the ball is a way to set the tone. It's a mentality. It's a mindset. It's how you practice. It's a year-round plan and how you develop your players. And we ran the ball effectively because we got great play at all positions, you know. I think the offensive line obviously played well around these guys. Tight end group got better and better as the year went. I think our receivers played well without the ball, and our quarterbacks got us in and out of the good plays, made good decisions on a lot of the run-pass option, run-screen options that we have, and a lot of the checks, you know. But ultimately, we've got three talented young men here. You know, all three of these guys could play at about a lot of the schools that I've been at in the past, truth be known. They're all size, speed guys. They've got everything that you would look for, and I think that they're potential pro NFL prospects. So I think you can see that they're well respected around our league. You know, they're big, physical, and they have finishing speed. When we got all three of these guys healthy, they're dangerous, you know, but it is a position where they get banged up, and having quality depth is key. You know, we rotate these guys to keep them fresh, to keep them healthy. They're some of our better practice players. Oh, you know, I think our players would tell you these guys are intense. They've got urgency throughout practice. They do it the right way. And I think that they've been great examples about how to be a selfless teammate. Never one time have I seen one of these guys pout or complain or, you know, hey, I didn't get my carries, you know. And some of them have stepped up at critical times for us. You know, I know Raymond was a guy in particular that I've been very impressed with. Played his better ball second half of the year. Tremendous spring. If we played today, he'd run out there first, you know. So, and he's a guy that we'll have a definite plan for to get the ball. He's a one-play touchdown guy, and he's got a tremendous attitude to go along with that.
Coach, Coach, heading into fall camp, what positions are you going to be having competitions for, open competitions?
Well, we don't have many where we have, you know, there's only a handful of players on our team where there's like, hey, this guy's a definite starter, you know. I think that's one of the things I'm excited about is we do have competition. These guys are going to have to be on top of their game to keep their spot. We've added some young players that I think are talented. But in general, we have more players that are close to playing winning football, you know, across the board. I think we're going to be able to play more players. We've got more quality depth. I think week in, week out, you're going to see competition throughout practice to see who deserves to start the game, who deserves to play more plays. And that's what you want, you know. But we certainly have a core group of players that experienced the things that we did last year in those lessons. Those things are not going to win us any games this year, but those are lessons that we learned that we can build off of and can create momentum for this year.
We know what Levi and Lewis can do. He performed very well for your team last year. Who else is going to be in the mix there at the quarterback spot during fall camp, Coach?
Well, Ave Mangale is a kid that we added. He got to our program in early February, went through spring practice, had a tremendous spring, really performed well in the spring game. He's 100% cleared medically now. His knee's fully recovered. You know, we've done lots of things to kind of help him with his rehab and his injury. And he's back playing football. You know, I think this is a young man who did not play football last year. He had an 18-month recovery from a significant knee injury. And he's back and healthy. So he'll be a contender. You know, he certainly proves that he can be very effective just watching him in practice. Then you've got the young freshman, Clifton McDowell, Chandler Fields. Clifton came in early. Chandler is a local product here from Rummel High that just joined our team on June 1st. He's had a tremendous summer, already created a buzz amongst our players. So we'll have good, healthy competition there, and certainly Levi's the leader in the clubhouse. Has experience, you know, playing as the number two guy and playing in every game last year. So I'm excited about Levi. You know, that's one of the things I've been most impressed with is his improvement, his attitude. Just a relentless worker, man. Sets a standard for the entire team. He's what you want your quarterback position to be. And I think he's ready to take that next step, and I think he'll play at a very high rate. If I was betting, man, I'd bet on Levi Lewis.
Coach, before long, you'll be back here in New Orleans to open up the season against Mississippi State. I'll wrap it up with that. How excited are you for you and your program to start off the season with such a marquee game inside the Mercedes-Benz Superdome to kick off the season?
Well, it really is a tremendous opportunity, not only for our football team and our university, but I think for our fans and everybody that cares about the Louisiana Raging Cajuns, you know, to show up and start this season. I think with some of the things that we've been through in this offseason, now more than ever is a time to really unite Cajun Nation. With Tony Robichaux passing away recently, think about Lynn and the other people that we've been through some difficult times. I think this is going to be a great way to rally the troops to some degree. Let's get together. Let's have a heck of a weekend. Let's compete. I know our football team looks forward to that opportunity. And it's a little bit of a big deal relative to if things go the way we want them to. We were able to win the conference championship game. We'd have an opportunity to come back to finish the year in the New Orleans Bowl. So a lot in front of us, man. A lot of work to do. We're excited about the challenges. We look forward to August 31st. But between now and then, man, a lot of long, hard days. And I'm excited about that. We're going to enjoy this journey.
Coach, best of luck to you and your program. We'll be in touch, and thank you so much for making time out for us today.
Thank you, guys, man. We appreciate the coverage of our team.
All right, thank you, Raymond. I love the enthusiasm of Billy Napier. You can just sense things are heading in the right direction for this ball club, and they open things up on that Saturday morning in the Superdome where the meetings were today when they take on Joe Moorhead and the Mississippi State Bulldogs. We will take a timeout. We'll come back with more as we wrap up our number one, the Jordy Helfrich Show on Acadiana's number one sports station, 103.7 The Game, 103.7thegame.com.
of the best guests join the Jordy Holtberg Show. If you missed an interview, you can check it out on demand at 1037thegame.com. Now, back to the show.
Yes, indeed, as we wrap up hour number one, the Astros, they're close to having their lineup at full strength with the return of Carlos Correa and Al Diaz. Brad Peacock's return date is a little bit questionable. Both Correa and Diaz are currently in the midst of their rehab assignments with the Astros affiliates, AAA Round Rock, AA Corpus Christi. Diaz has played in four games to date, two each with Round Rock and Corpus Christi. He hasn't exactly been tearing the cover off the ball, one hit, five strikeouts in 17 plate appearances. But the good news is that he's feeling good. The hamstring and starting to gain strength again. So he feels good. According to A.J. Hinch, he feels he's very close. He'll be back with the club most likely by Tuesday of this week. Meanwhile, Correa has also played in four rehab games, all with the AAA affiliate. He was in New Orleans at the Shrine on Airline. If his results are any indication, he's ready to put the Astros uniform once again in 15 at-bats. He has six hits. Three of those hits were doubles. He's taking every third game off to not rush things, but he, too, says he's feeling great. Quote, I'm feeling healthy, ready to go. I've just got to serve my time here and get some at-bats in order for me to go up there and start off hot. The main things, don't rush. Take it step by step. Listen to the trainers. Make sure you're 100% when you come back. Very, very well said. So we'll see how long before they all get back and they're all being contributors again. Look, this football ops building, just kind of summarize it. LSU football is a corporation, a separate entity. They pay for their own stuff. They do their own thing. Now, they give back to the university. They give millions of dollars to the academic side of things every year. Some years more, some years less. This was all privately raised money. What happens is people get all up in arms. Why aren't they, you know, these people donating to the academic side of things? And it's not as fun as donating to the athletic side of things. Now, this is open. The Nutrition Center is open to all student athletes, not just football players. They've fluctuated as to where to put this thing. It just made sense to finalize it and put it there. It's something. There's no question about it. First class all the way. But it does raise the eyelids of many people out there going, whoa, what, $28 million, are you kidding me? There's a lot of money out there that you could have done to help some other things as well. So, you know, anyway, but football makes the money. And they can do what they want, when they want, and how they want. All privately. It is some kind of first-class operation. No question. So now the pressure's ramped up even more. When you gonna beat Bama? When you gonna get in the Final Four? When are you gonna win a national championship? Goes with the territory. So we've covered the Tigers. We've covered the Cajuns. We've covered the Astros. In hour number two, we're gonna cover golf. There's a new sheriff in the golf world, and he spoke his mind. Plus recruiting. It's all coming your way. Hour number two, the Jordy Holtberg Show here on Acadiana's number one sports station, 103.7 The Game, 1037thegame.com. Come on back.
Live from the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette.
Tigers pull off another miracle.
This is Acadiana's sports station, 1037 The Game. Streaming live on the 1037 The Game mobile app and online at 1037thegame.com.
He struck him out, and the Tigers have won.
This is the Jordy Holtberg Show. Get involved and call 337-706-0111. Follow along at 1037 The Game on Facebook and Twitter. And now it's time. Here's your host, Jordy Holtberg.
Hour number two, and away we go. Happy Monday, July 22nd, the year 2019. CD in the 237 Roof Studios. Yours truly, Studio 1A. Four LSU Tigers named to the Butkus Award watch list. Michael Divinity, Patrick Queen, Kalevon Chason, and Jacob Phillips. They got a brand new practice facility, locker room, a brand new nutrition center. If those four play like we think they can, this LSU defense is going to be spectacular. Without further ado, we do it every day at this time of the day. Let's take our daily walk around the sports water cooler. CD, button please.
Here's today's Hot Topics, brought to you by Cajun Chef. Spice up your life with Cajun Chef products. Delectably delicious, decidedly better.
CD, for a Monday, Odell said he was disrespected by the Giants, but he has a new lease on life with the Browns, and he kept the Giants brand alive. You agree with that?
You know, I have to kind of agree with that, Jordy, because you can about imagine if you didn't have Odell Beckham Jr. with Eli Manning, where would they have been? I go, what honestly was enticing enough to get you talking about the New York Giants with Eli Manning in his less than ideal look? Sometimes he just like looks like he's just got a 1,000-yard stare going.
Two things.
Yeah, exactly. But like I said, Jordy, it just feels like to me Odell Beckham Jr. was keeping it alive a little bit.
Two things. Fighting on the field with Josh Norman and one catch, and that was it. And Odell has just marched on to pay dirt financially and socially, and it's amazing. Anyway, go ahead, O. Do your thing, buddy. What's up?
Jordy, you know, we got a lot to get to. Obviously, over the weekend, it became official earlier today. Actually, early this morning, I should say. Chris Jackson, now known as Mahmoud Abdul-Rauf, his jersey is going to be retired, Jordy. It feels like that day would never come, but now with new AD Scott Woodward, he was all in on it, Jordy. How great is that to see his jersey being finally retired amongst some of the all-time greats?
Number 35, he is one of the all-time greats. You do the all-time LSU best five players ever in basketball. He is certainly one of those with Pistol Pete and Bob Pettit and Shaq, Rudy Macklin, and now Chris Jackson. Very well deserved. He was, he had his issues in the NBA, and it's nice that we have leadership here that isn't afraid to make a move that some people might find derogatory or contrarian to. So I admire the leadership. I admire my friend who I'll have on tomorrow, Rudy Macklin. He kind of pushed this through. Chris Jackson was spectacular, deserved it. It's a very tough thing to get done. You have to have incredible numbers and incredible records, and Chris Jackson certainly has that. 35, retired forever. It'll happen the course of this season. I'm happy for Chris. Yes.
It makes you wonder, Jordy, again, there's only been, I believe, 14 numbers all time that have retired by LSU. More so on the basketball front, I just want to throw this out there, Jordy. Who do you think is next to see their jersey retired? And you can't choose yourself, Jordy, because that feels like it's way too easy.
Ooh. No. That'll never happen. Wow, that's a great question. Look, at least with basketball, they'll never be worn again. Football jerseys like Jerry Stovall's and the like will be worn again. I don't know. I'll have to do some soul searching on that one. That's a tough question. That is a very tough question.
It's tough, Jordy, because there's so many great and deserving talents that have come through LSU's doors over the years. Now we got to flip it over, Jordy, to your St. Louis Cardinals, Jordy. Friday night, I was amazed seeing this. They were down 7-0, Jordy, down 7-0 in the ball game. But then they turned it around, winning 12-11, Jordy. Just an improbable rally by your Cards. It was impressive to see.
Well, you know, there's no quit in the Redbirds. That's a great organization. They have their ups and their downs, but through the course of time, it's just a well run organization. That's not the problem in baseball. It's here we go again with another spectator hit by a foul ball. And why other teams like the White Sox, who have said we're going to put nets all the way down from foul pole to from home plate to foul pole. And every team in baseball needs to do it. It's ridiculous not to do it. Just get it done. Get it done.
Exactly. I think that's definitely the first thing that the MLB needs to do after the 2019 season is all said and done.
I wouldn't even wait that long. See, I'd get it done now. I get it done.
Well, I'm sure you'd probably wind up getting this thing set up in place as soon as possible, but then you actually have to go add the netting to it. Odds are that'll be something you deal with as soon as the offseason begins, Jordy. That's what I was getting
at. Well, I'm just saying, if you go on a road trip, 3-4 game road trip, yeah. You get enough manpower, you got enough money, get the poles up, get the nets up, do it. Next time you're at home, they're up. I don't want the chance of anybody in my stadium, if I'm the owner, of getting hit by a foul ball. It's just not right.
All right, Jordy, next one for you. I think it's definitely maybe a little bit of fun stuff going on with the New Orleans Pelicans rookie Zion Williamson. He withdrew himself from the USA basketball select team ahead of training for the FIBA World Cup. A lot more to just focus on what's going on with him and being able to become the big player that he wants to be with the New Orleans Pelicans. How huge is that, Jordy, to hear that from Zion Williamson? He has definitely shown himself to be all in on the program.
I don't think he's in shape. I think that's the one reason why he opted out. It's no conflict with anything that's going on with when the Pelicans report. It's just the fact that he enjoyed his offseason way too much, and I just think he needs to get in with a nutritionist and a trainer, and I think he needs to get in shape. And that's understandable. It happens. I mean, you get on that circuit, and it's tough. So I think he needs to get in shape, and I don't think he wants to risk any injury. So with that, wiser minds have prevailed. He'll have plenty of time and plenty of opportunities to play nationally for the United States.
And that's going to be the fun part, Jordy, to say the least. But now we got to move over. Of course, we got to talk about some golf. I know you have Alex Myers on a little bit later.
Yeah.
Shane Lowry gets the win in a just dominant fashion at that, winning it by 6 strokes. Tommy Fleetwood comes up second. But I think the coolest thing of it all, Jordy, this past weekend was Lee Westwood, the elder statesman of the PGA, kind of keeping it competitive throughout. And I absolutely enjoyed seeing that. I was hoping upon hope he could wind up getting it done. But it's great to see a countryman like Shane Lowry get it done in Ireland.
I thought it was a great championship. I thought the course was magnificent. I love Lynx golf. I love with the ocean or the sea to the side and the large rough and all that. It was terrific. I'm a sentimental kind of a person. I love seeing older players have another shot at glory, and Westwood certainly gave us some great moments. I just wonder if there's any great moments left for Phil Mickelson. I just don't see it, but no, it was a great tournament, no question. Loved it.
It was definitely entertaining and one heck of a way to kind of end whenever you just look at the Grand Slam of the world of golf. Just really entertaining to say the very least.
Mm-hmm.
And Jordy, good news for the old ball coach, Jordy. He gets his AAF championship ring. He finally gets it, Jordy.
Look, I don't know where Steve Spurrier is going to put that ring amongst all the rings and trophies. And I mean, think of his career. Heisman Trophy winner, national championship coach. He has basically done it all wherever he's been. And again, he's one of the faces of Southeastern Conference football. There's no question about it. There's a reason why he was at SEC Media Days to help promote this documentary that's coming out. He and Archie and Herschel. He's in the Mount Rushmore of SEC football influencers. Let's put it that way. So good for the old ball coach. He gets another ring. Okay, whatever.
And you bringing up the old ball coach. That's probably one of the SEC Media Days, they're well out in the rearview mirror, but I think that was an absolute highlight for me, being able to see the old ball coach doing his thing and having a lot of fun with the media, talking about the XFL, of course, but trust me, that was probably the highlight of it all, because you think about it, Jordy, like one of the highlights from SEC Media Days from just a few years ago, Les Miles and Steve Spurrier, because you never knew what would come out of their mouth.
Yeah, and Free Shoes University is what he always said about Florida State, and you can't spell citrus
without UT,
without UT for his knock on the Tennessee Volunteers. So he was a classic, to say the very, very least. Clint, thank you very much. There's your Hot Topics for the day, brought to you by Cajun Chef Hot Sauce, the best hot sauce every day, because the Biart family for nearly 90 years does it the same way. Finest spices, finest peppers. Do yourself a flavor. Get Cajun Chef Hot Sauce with you wherever you go. Billy Embody, recruiting next.
The Blonde Bomber is back, and better than ever, as you're locked into the Jordy Humpert Show
on 1037 The Game, 1037thegame.com, and on the free mobile app.
Welcome back. The Jordy Helfrich Show rolls on. And joining us now to talk about a variety of topics is the recruiting guru from Go247 Sports, Billy Embody. Is it true, Billy, that you have already leased out one of the pods in the new LSU football ops locker room so you can be comfortable as you pound out story after story after story? Is there any truth to that?
No truth. I'm fully expecting, though, that the pods will be included in the new media room that's rumored to be included in these massive renovations, though. So I'm keeping my hopes high on that.
They promised me I could do my show there one day, stretched out. I may fall asleep in that comfort zone, but wow, some pretty. Let me just put it this way: when I was bouncing the basketball for LSU, we had nothing near the sort of that in any way, shape, or form. I miss the old wooden stool and the hangers and all that. It's just completely different. Unbelievable.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's something that, you know, people can look to and say, you know, after years of probably LSU falling behind in the arms race of college football and their facilities, that they have one of the best facilities now in college football for their team. I mean, the job that they did putting this building together, really just unbelievable. It's really, really impressive.
How much value do you put upon that when it comes to a 17, 18-year-old kid making a decision on where they want to spend their next 3, 4, 5 years? How much does that matter?
I think it matters a fair amount. I think when you put together a facility like that, it makes the players feel more comfortable. It makes them want to be around more. And I think that, especially the way the locker room is built, most locker rooms, you have the lockers, you know, vertical, and you have little areas, and it's all kind of segmented. And so you can't, you know, you kind of have your area of guys that are around you in the locker room, right? This one is so open that you can see clear across. So you can see somebody walk in, you can see guys across the room. So it kind of will not only help them recover with the pods and you know, the versatility of those aspects of it, but you'll be able to say what's up to the guy across the room. You'll be able to kind of, you know, have a back and forth and talk and things like that. And I think that helps build team camaraderie. And when you have that translate to the recruiting side of things, recruits could see that. It just looks like a more comfortable room to be in, which can make a prospect feel more at home.
Billy, I'm about to go to 247 Sports. I know this was all done for the benefit of the athlete and the recovery, but it seems to me this is a coach's dream, because why would these players want to go anywhere else? They can have their eyes on them all day long, and they're all together, as you mentioned, the camaraderie, the training facility. Now they've got the nutrition center that's there. It's all under one roof. My goodness, why would they go anywhere else? I mean, they go to class, they come there, they stay there. It just seems like the perfect scenario from a coaching perspective.
Right, and I don't think, you know, college football players and student athletes in general necessarily have too much free time, or you know, certainly don't live the life of a normal college student. And there is that encouragement that the excuse me, the guys can hang around the facility a little bit more, be encouraged to do that, especially with the nutrition center there. But I think it's something where, you know, you love them to be comfortable hanging around the facility when they might not have, you know, as many other places to go and hang around town, because they just aren't necessarily normal college students.
All privately raised, whether through TAF or like Teran Matthew donated some dollars to get his name up there. I mean, it just is terrific. I wonder how much that had to play with Cole Taylor from Grand Junction, Colorado. That's the newest commitment. Has LSU ever had a tight end that was 6'7"?
It depends on what their official measurements were, but I'd imagine so. And it's one where, you know, out of the middle of nowhere, especially Colorado, I mean, that's a great job by the staff to get him on campus for an official visit. And and get him locked in before the end of the summer. Gives them their tight end commit and a really, really good prospect that moves well, productive at the level of competition that he plays at. I think he'll have somewhat of an adjustment period coming to the SEC, but he's really, really impressive.
6'7", 230. I mean, I can see those end zone, red zone type of situations. So that puts LSU at 21 commitments. Man, if they can lock up some of these kids that they're still after in state, that's four more spots. There's always going to be somebody that decommits. It never fails. But, boy, they're on course, aren't they?
Yeah. I mean, it really is a class that's put together really well. And now I think, with Jaquelin Roy's announcement coming up at the end of the month, or excuse me, end of the week on Friday, I mean, they've got a chance to really add to it there. And then Jacobian Guillory is still out there. And look, it's a class that addresses needs really, really well. And anyone else that they add is certainly gravy if they can get Roy and Guillory on board.
He is Bill Ambody, Go 247 Sports. I know you've been traveling the basketball circuit. What have you found out? Will Wade said he expects to get one, maybe two other prospects into the fray. Hearing any news on what Will's doing?
Yeah, I think the one to watch is just in Fale Dante, the 2019 or 2020 five-star big man. If he reclassifies, if he can get his academic test scores and grades together by the end of the month, he'll have a real chance to go to college this cycle and be on campus in the fall. So LSU's sitting in a really good spot there, right with Oregon, I think. I think Kentucky has kind of faded since the official visit might have worn off. But if they can get him, he's obviously a huge, huge difference maker from there. I think if you don't land Dante or if he doesn't go to college or what have you, I think you look for somebody late here that's more of a depth guy, a 10 to 15 minute a night guy that can just kind of give your guys a breather and not be too much of a liability out there, because it is July. There's not much out there, but those are the two guys, or that's the one name that really stands out to me right now as far as a late addition. But the summer comes to a close. They've put some offers out there on the table as of late for some of these 2020s and 2021s, and as over the course of the year as it goes, they'll start to get together and bring these guys in for official visits, and that's when we'll kind of really see, who's at the top of their board and things like that.
Billy Ambody, Go 247 Sports. We know the cachet that LSU football has around the country. That brand is getting stronger and stronger and stronger. What's that? What's the LSU basketball brand like with all the things that have transpired? Yes, they had a great run a year ago, and it's exciting. They also had some of the downbeat news that was associated with that. What kind of vibe do you get when you're out there and you're looking at recruits and you mention LSU? What's the thought process on this program?
I think it's one where I think for the most part players are excited to see where it goes this year after an SEC title, one that I think for the most part recruits are beginning to see that, Will Wade's in a good spot. The program certainly has talent in it. And it's one where I think they're going to be a viable threat in the SEC moving forward as the waters kind of calm around the program. So you got Will Wade as a coach. You have a great on-the-court coach. You've got somebody who's a proven recruiter at an elite level. Sustaining the success they had is probably the biggest question mark, I would say, but it's not necessarily a true question mark. It's just a matter of how they can keep up in the rest of the SEC, which continues to be, I think, really the strongest basketball conference in the country as of late.
I think that's the next big money-raising situation is how do we improve the Pete Maravich Assembly Center? Football's in good shape. Baseball's in good shape. It's time for basketball, don't you think? I mean, it's time.
Yeah, and I think the basketball practice facility will be the one that would be addressed first in all likelihood. Get them a weight room in that facility. Yes. Get their coaches' offices all in that facility rather than having them in the administration building. Doing the things that just make it a more efficient program is probably up first rather than the PMAC.
Right. I'm with you. I'm with you. Billy Embiid, he's a traveling vagabond, but can't wait to see what that media room looks like, as I know you guys will be treated with first class and free meals all day long, man, at the Nutrition Center with the great Chef Johnson. How about that?
Yeah, we're looking forward to having some meals out of there every now and again. That'll be great.
That's awesome. Billy, thanks, buddy. Appreciate the time on short notice, buddy. Take care.
Anytime. You too.
All right, buddy. There you go. Billy and buddy, go to 47 Sports. Brought to you by Hooters. Hooters just makes you happy for all the ball games. That's where you go. Bring your team in there. Dress them up in a uniform. Get 40 boneless wings on the house. Yes, indeed. Hooters on Ambassador Caffrey Parkway. Renovated, brand new, just like the football locker room. It is exquisite and much, much more. Hooters just makes you happy. There's a new sheriff in the golf world, and I, for one, love it. Alex Myers joins us next.
There's only one place you'll find all the movers, shakers, and Tigers newsmakers. And it's right here on the Jordy Humpert Show on 103.7 The Game.
Well, the major championships in the game of golf have come and gone. Tiger Woods with the Masters, Brooks Koepka at the PGA, Gary Woodland at the U.S. Open, and now Shane Lowry with a six-stroke win over Tommy Fleetwood at Royal Portrush. It's been an eventful season, to say the very least. And joining us throughout the course of the year, Alex Myers from Golf Digest. Alex, good afternoon. I appreciate the time. It seemed fitting for a countryman to win the Open Championship in Northern Ireland. What a tournament for Shane Lowry.
Obviously, you know, we started the week talking about Rory McIlroy and his ties Northern Ireland. He grew up about an hour away from there. And, of course, Graham McDowell and Darren Clark, who's a member of Royal Portrush. And of those three, Graham McDowell at least made the cut. The other guys didn't. But Northern Ireland certainly adopted the guy from just a couple hours south in Ireland, Shane Lowry. He became the fan favorite right when he started to make his move. Just had an incredible week. We heard all coming in how tough this golf course was, how it would play even tougher with difficult conditions, and we saw all that, and yet this guy still shot 15 under par to win by six shots. And the fact that it's his first major is pretty remarkable to have it be in such a dominant fashion.
No question. He, man, what was the turning point in this chance? There was a, you know, Tiger I saw on the first tee. He teed off, and I saw a grimace, and I went, oh, God, he's done. That was terrible for him. But what was the turning point in this tournament for you?
Well, Shane Lowry on Saturday really took control of this tournament. And, you know, it started, he actually hit a couple incredible recovery shots. I think it was on the 10th hole. He's in the rough, and he plays a shot back up towards the green. And it's one of these holes that's got dunes on either side of it. And I don't know if he purposely did it or what, but he played a bank shot that rolled to within basically a gimme birdie on 10, and that really got him going. He shot a 63 to take that four-shot lead, to really take the air out of the tournament, because with the tough conditions coming on Sunday, you weren't going to see someone really go low again. So it was going to be very tough to really track him down. So I really think it was that 10th hole on Saturday that really got him going. Just a magical round of 63. Obviously, would have tied the major championship record if not for Brandon Grace's lone 62 a few years ago at the Open. 63 is, you know, matched by about 30 other guys as the best score ever at a major. So whenever you do that at a major, you're putting yourself in pretty good shape.
Yeah, Alex Myers, Golf Digest. Subplot to the Shane Lowry runaway win. Boy, there's a new sheriff, and I love Brooks Koepka. And he, it's kind of like he says, look, I'm the best golfer in the world. I know it. Yes. This is my game, and I'm going to speak my mind. And yep. I all for one, am thrilled that he called out J.B. Holmes. That drives me crazy with the slow play.
Yeah, no, definitely. That's a great nickname, the Sheriff. You're right, because he really kind of has taken control, and he'll speak out about anything. I mean, the week before, he admitted he doesn't practice when it's not a major. You know, he just says these things that are so great. But, yeah, you know, I think we would have gotten even more blunt comments from Brooks had J.B. not shot an 87 that final round, which was just brutal to watch. Obviously, even more brutal to watch if you were Brooks in person having to play with him. But, you know, 87 mm-hmm. was the worst round of the day by 7 shots. And so certainly I think Brooks felt a little bad for his playing partner. I think had J.B. shot a normal score, we might have even heard Brooks go off a little more. And because, yeah, Brooks came into that round with an outside chance of winning yet another major, obviously, and he goes out there and bogeys the first 4 holes, which is something you just don't see Brooks Koepka do, obviously, at a major championship. So you had to figure that he was frustrated playing with J.B. The cameras caught him kind of looking away in disgust when J.B. was plumb bobbing over, you know, a little tap-in on one hole. We heard reports of him looking at a marshal and pointing at his wrist to say, like, come on, you know, look, keep track of the time here. And so, yeah, it definitely got to him. But you know, it's slow play is a problem. It's not just J.B. Holmes, obviously. We talk about different players who play slow. I mean, Bryson DeChambeau is another guy that comes up. Jason Day, Justin Rose. These are star players who are slow players.
Yes.
And it might take another star like Brooks Koepka calling them out for the PGA Tour or the RNA to do something about it.
Who makes these decisions? I mean, because it's quite obvious.
Right.
You know, I remember case in point, and he changed his game because of it, was Sergio Garcia. He used to take forever. He doesn't do that anymore. So you can change.
You can change. I mean, Kevin Na is still not a lightning quick player, but he's changed from his struggles that were so noted at the Players' Championship that year when he couldn't pull the trigger on a shot. And, you know, he's worked on his pre-shot routine to help. Now, J.B. Holmes, I mean, you know, he's got a slow pre-shot routine. He does the plumb bobbing with the putting. Obviously, that takes a little time. But what Brooks was pointing out is that, you know, he won't even have his glove on when it's his turn to hit. And he'll put on his glove, you know. Just, you know, we always talk about as amateurs, ready golf. And these pros sometimes, they're so accustomed to their pre-shot routine and doing everything exactly the same every time that they don't play ready golf. And that's where, you know, and yes, they usually shoot in the 60s, so they're not taking as long as us hackers, you know, shooting in the 80s. But J.B. Holmes shot 87. So when he does do that, then it is a brutally long round. But you know, it's the governing bodies. It's the USGA. It's the RNA at this tournament. And at the PGA Tour events, it's the PGA Tour itself that could crack down, that could actually, you know, the slow play penalties have been so rare. I believe it's only in a regular PGA Tour event. It's been 25 years since a single player, it was Glenn All Day was his nickname, that he got a penalty. And you see guys get put on the clock and warned, but unless they get an actual penalty, they're really not going to change. I know they get a little fine here or there, but these guys make so much money, it's really not that. It's penalty that would even cost them more money in the long run, whether it be a 1-stroke or a 2-stroke. You know, we've heard Adam Scott come out this year and even say, penalize me. I don't care. I'll be the scapegoat or something. Just you got to do something to get the ball rolling on this.
I'm with you 100%. There's no reason why you can't at least have your glove on before it's your turn to hit. That makes absolutely no sense to me. But JB got it where it hurt, really, by shooting that 87. I think he lost over almost $750,000 in earnings.
Yep, that's right. Yeah, just an awful day for him. I mean, you really do hate to see it when a guy who played so well all week, and actually it was kind of amazing because he's had not a good year, and he's been struggling of late. So it kind of came out of the blue, but to shoot 3 rounds in the 60s and then shoot an 87, that costs you a lot of money, obviously, to drop from third place all the way down to 67th place in one round is tough.
Yes.
So, you know, as happy as Shane Lowry is today, obviously J.B. Holmes isn't feeling too good.
Alex Myers, Golf Digest. Who's going to be more relevant in the next 3-4 years, Tiger Woods or Phil Mickelson?
Oh, Tiger Woods. I mean, you know, I think people went crazy after that first round. I mean, he looked terrible, obviously. Yeah, he looked physically terrible. Mentally, he looked like he kind of checked out early after getting off to a tough start. But people were basically writing his career obituary after the round. And, I mean, you know, you have to remember, this guy won the Masters 3 months ago. So you gotta calm down. And, you know, some of these comments that I don't know how I'm going to feel when I wake up in the morning, and some days that are good days, some days are bad days. He's been saying this all along since he came back last year. Once he won the Masters, I think people just expected that to be the new normal. It's not the new normal. I mean, he had a good week that week, and he felt good, obviously, and the weather was better, and this and that. And, you know, all the things that have to go right for him to win, you know, he used to not have to need all those things. Now he does need all those things. But he's been honest about that the whole time. This week was a week where we talked about it, the layoff. We talked about the weather being a little chillier. You know, and then again, there's just kind of this luck of the draw with his soreness that some days he's sore, some days he's not. Obviously, those things did not go his way. He shot the 78 the first day. You didn't hear anybody the next day saying his career was over or whatever when he shot a 70 that could have easily been a 66. He looked a lot better on day two. He obviously woke up. He felt a little better. So, you know, it's going to be a hit or miss with him. He's not going to be consistently great like he used to be, but, you know, he's still going to be able to have his moments at certain events, especially when the weather's a little better. And so, you know, we'll see him hopefully in these FedEx playoffs and playing well like he did last year.
Yeah, the Northern Trust is coming up the 8th through the 11th right. of August, then the BMW Championship, and we wrap things up August 22nd through the 25th with the Tour Championship. So the four majors are done. It's a given the Masters is number one because of who won it and how he did it right. over Dustin Johnson and Brooks Koepka and Xander Schauffele. Rank the other three as far as, you know, drama, fun to watch, excitement. How would you rank the last the other three?
You know, I guess I'd probably rank the Open as number two. You know, there wasn't that much drama because Shane Lowry was so good. But that backstory of, you know, him growing up a few hours away and the crowds being there and just the whole fact that they were back at Royal Portrush after so many years, and it just looked so spectacular of a course, and the Open's going to go back there pretty soon. I mean, there's no doubt about that. So I'd rank that number two.
Beautiful.
I'd probably say Pebble number three, again, because of the setting, but also because you had Brooks Koepka make that charge up the leaderboard early on Sunday that I still get chills thinking about. I mean, I can't believe Gary Woodson hung on there. I mean, just an incredible job by him. And, you know, him winning his first major was neat as well. And then finally, Brooks. I mean, I'm giving Brooks the shaft again here. I'm disrespecting him. I hope he doesn't. His win at Bethpage. And, no, but part of it was just it wasn't that exciting because he took control so early. I know, obviously, Dustin had a brief moment of hope there on Sunday when he was trying to come back. But really, that was Brooks' tournament the whole way. And, you know, it just – Bethpage, I love Bethpage, but the setup was a little – you know, it was too much of a bomber's course. I thought you didn't get to see as much variety there. But obviously, when Brooks wins a major now, that's history too. So, you know, all in all, it was a great year for majors. I know, you know, people are a little disappointed after the start we got off to because with Tiger winning and then even Brooks winning, you didn't have the biggest names winning these last two in Gary Woodland and Shane Lowry. But obviously very good players and at incredible settings at Pebble Beach and Royal Portrush. So a great year as a whole. And yeah, you know, Tiger Woods wins a major no matter what happens in the other three. You can't be disappointed.
That's number one.
Yeah,
that's right.
Yeah,
you're right. Alex Myers, Golf Digest. With all the pressure in the world, has anyone had a poorer start, like the first hole of a championship, than Rory McIlroy? And then to come around, I think he gained more. I know he didn't make the cut, but I think he gained more in how he fought back in that second round than maybe anything else he could have done.
Yeah, I mean, what an incredible couple days for him, the ups and the downs. that first round was pretty stunning, or really that first hole was stunning. And almost as stunning was that on 18, he tripled 18 after he quadrupled the first hole. But then, yeah, you mentioned on the second day, we saw the real Rory McIlroy, or what he's capable of doing. And that's playing better golf than anybody, really, when he's on. And that was, you usually don't get too excited about a guy making a charge to make the cut. But that really was an amazing round of golf that he played. And it's too bad he just couldn't get one more to make it to the weekend. You saw how much emotion, how much it meant to him after. And, he's an easy guy to root for. He really is. The way he speaks, the way he plays, he's exciting. He's a good guy. You could see that with how he handles himself with the fans and everything else. Obviously a disappointing week for him, but you're right. He almost made more fans in the way he handled himself after that tough round than had he played, great golf the whole week.
Right. All right, last one. Alex Myers, Golf Digest. Give me your top five ranked players in the world, starting with number five and heading on up, if you can, please.
Oh, wow, that's a tough one. Might be easy to start at number one, because obviously Brooks Koepka is number one without a doubt.
All right. Who's number two?
Okay, after that, I still think you got to go with Rory McIlroy, who's number two. Then I'll throw Dustin in there. I know Dustin and Rory are both very disappointed to not win a major this year, but they're still, two great players. Let's see. Justin Thomas, I think he's going to have a little resurgence here at some point. I know he had the wrist injury this year. That threw him off. But if I'm looking going into next year, I still put him there. And then I'll throw Tiger in at number five because, even with the health concerns and everything else, I think he still won, two of his last 11 starts. He just doesn't play that much. So it seems like he doesn't, win that much, but he also doesn't play that much. His scoring average is great usually in these events. That 78 really was a blip on the radar for him at Boro Port Rush. I still think that if you're putting him, I'd still bet on him about over anybody else other than maybe those four guys.
I'm one of those sentimental guys. I loved it back in the day when Freddie Couples was playing at Augusta and was a factor late in his prime. Yeah. I thought watching Lee Westwood at the Open was a lot of fun, seeing that guy do his thing.
It was, and he's got an amazing record, and that was his 12th top five at a major without a win. That's one off the all-time record by Harry Cooper, who played a million years ago and had a lot of match play up in there as well. So really, Westwood has more close calls without a win than anybody to major, and you wish that someone like that deserves a major. I mean, he's a guy. Think about this: Lee Westwood got to number one in the world. That's something Phil Mickelson never even did in his career. So he's had a great career. It was kind of great to see him back in the mix. I still don't think, obviously, at 46, it probably won't happen for him at this point. But he still had a great career, and it just shows you just. As good as a guy is, you can't ever guarantee that someone's going to win a major, no matter how many times they're in it. It's very hard to do.
Yep. Alex Myers of Golf Digest, kind enough to join us. I, for one, love Sheriff of the PGA Tour, Brooks Koepka. I think he needs to speak up more and louder. I'm all for it. Man, thanks for the time, and get ready for the Northern Trust. Well, we got a couple of tournaments before that. The FedEx St. Jude Invitational is coming up, and then we get to the FedEx Cup Playoff Series. So still some golf to be done, buddy. Thank you.
Thanks, Jordy. Take care, man.
You're the best. Alex Myers, always accommodating, always forthright, and always very, very knowledgeable. We're back to wrap things up here on the Jordy Helpert Show.
Here's three pieces of advice to live by. Never play cards with a guy whose last name is Estate. Don't spit into the wind. And always get your sports talk from the Jordy Hultberg Show on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game.
All right, we are back, wrapping things up, brought to you by DC's Little Capital X and I-10 at the Henderson Cecilia exit in Brobridge. Everything for your travel needs in that true soul food deli tucked away in the corner with the best cheeseburger in the world. That is DC's Little Capital X on I-10 at the Henderson Cecilia exit in Brobridge. Daily history lesson. It was on this day, July 22nd, the year 1997. Mr. Efficiency, Atlanta Brave pitcher Greg Maddux threw a complete game. That's not out of the ordinary for Maddux, but he did it in only 77 pitches. Think about that. 77 pitches. 63 of those 77 were strikes. He had 6 strikeouts, and the Braves beat the Chicago Cubs 4-1 on this day. Greg Maddux, Hall of Famer, July 22nd, 1997. If today is your birthday, well, happy birthday from all of us to each and every one of you. You share your day with the likes of happy 28th birthday, Selena Gomez. Happy 25th birthday, he's fixing to get paid, Ezekiel Elliott of the Cowboys. Happy 80th birthday and get well, keep fighting the fight, Alex Trebek. And two actors that I really like, 74th birthday to Danny Glover, and happy 65th birthday to William Defoe. So happy birthday to them, and happy birthday to you. If it's your anniversary, happy anniversary. Hope you keep adding year after year after year to it. Special thanks to our guest today, Sarah Alfaro. Very interesting with HNTB Architecture. They were the firm behind the new LSU football locker room inside their football ops building. It was fantastic. Billy Napier, compliments of Raymond Parsh, Billy Embody, and Alex Myers. Each one of those will be found on demand at 1037thegame.com. So go check it out in case you missed it, or if you liked it so much, you just want to listen again. So we appreciate them. Tomorrow, I don't know yet. Got to figure it out. But I promise you, we will. It'll be fun. No question. CD, job well done. Great to have you back. Full time in the saddle, big guy. Thanks to all of you for listening, to our partners that make it possible. We couldn't do it without you. Hope you have a great rest of your day and evening. Come on back tomorrow, same time, 2 to 4 p.m. Same great station, 1037 The Game, and at 1037thegame.com. Until then, I'm Jordy Helfberg. Stay thirsty, my friends. Stay thirsty. Bumper to bumper sports from Sunbelt Conference Media Day. Next, here on Acadiana's number one sports station, 1037 The Game. So long, everybody.